pasuk in this week's parasha. Atem nitzovim hayoyim kulchem lifnei Hashem aleikeichem. That you are all standing today before the Ribbono Shel Olam, Rasheichem, Shivteichem, the heads of the tribes, Zikneichem, the elders, Sheitreichem, those who were responsible, placed in a position of responsibility for the behavior of Klal Yisrael, Tapchem, small children, Sheichem, the women, Gerchem, the Geirim. There's a whole discussion in Rashi here as to who were the Geirim at this time. Michetei Veitzecha Ad Shevei Meimecha. Rashi explains that Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to Klal Yisrael on the last day of his life. Rashi quotes Chazal that this statement of Atem Nitzovim Hayem Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Aleikeichem and the following psukim in the Torah, which are basically an establishment of a bris, of a covenant between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, took place on the last day in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, on the day in which Moshe Rabbeinu dies. And the point of the exercise, the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu got everybody together and told them what he tells them in Parshas Nitzavim and continues in Parshas Vayelech, was, says Rashi b'shem Chazal, lahachnisom bivris, to make with them a bris, to make with them a contract, to make with them a deal, which is going to take place between Am Yisrael on the one side, Moshe Rabbeinu as the intermediate, and the Ribbono Shel Olam on the other side. This is a contract between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. And the question which arises here, which is discussed by the Mefarshim, is why did Moshe Rabbeinu, on the day that he died, have to get together the entire Klal Yisrael and make this bris between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael? There already were two situations where Moshe Rabbeinu was the intermediary to make a contract between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam. There were already two brisos between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Last week's parasha, Parshas Kisavai, where the Torah describes the Allah, the Divrei Abris, Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe Lichreis Es Bnei Yisrael Beretz Moav, and there the pasuk says explicitly that this is a contract that the Ribbono Shel Olam is making between, that Moshe Rabbeinu is making between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam, in addition to Asher Koras Itom B'Chayrev, the contract that was already made between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam at Maimed Har Sinai. So we know that there was a contract between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael at Maimed Har Sinai, Har Chayrev. There was a second contract which is already told to us in Parshas Kisavai, where Klal Yisrael made an agreement with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the agreement was that if they keep the contract with the Ribbono Shel Olam, then there will be brachas, and if they go against the contract, there will be the 98 klolos that are listed in the parasha. And what is the significance of this third bris, which Moshe Rabbeinu is now making, this third contract that Moshe Rabbeinu is now making between Klal Yisrael and between the Ribbono Shel Olam? The second question which bothers a lot of the Mefarshim here is the word that the Torah uses. In the first pasuk of this week's parasha, what the Torah is trying to do is to get across the idea that the entirety of Klal Yisrael, men, women, children, Skenim, Rosh Hashvatim, Chayt Feyetzim, Shevei Mayim, you name it, whoever it was, Geirim, whoever it was who can be defined and can be considered as part of Yom Yisrael, were standing there. That is what the Pasuk is trying to say. Atem Yitzavim, you are standing, and then the Pasuk lists everybody who's standing there. So the message that the Pasuk is trying to get across is that the entirety of Klal Yisrael stood there. What is the Hebrew word to stand?
Lamoid.
Omid, right? So why doesn't the Pasuk say, Atem Omdim Hayom Kulchem Lifnei Hashem? Why is the Pasuk using a strange word? Nitzovim. What does Nitzovim mean in this sense? So, Adamai will tell me, Rabbi Goldberg, resident Talmud Chacham, will tell you that Nitzovim means gathered. Well, what's a gathering in Hebrew? What? Anybody know? It's a gathering of people. A group of people. How do you say in Hebrew, a group of people?
It's Hebrew.
How do you say to gather together a group of people? Lekabetz. That's where the word kibbutz comes from. Kibbutz means a group of people. So if so, the Pasuk should say that there was a kibbutz of people there. Why does the Pasuk use the word nitzovim? Well, one of the people, one of the Mefarshim, who discussed this point is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh on the first Pasuk of this week's parasha asks the question. And he says, why is the Pasuk using the word Nitzovim? And by explaining why the Pasuk is using the word Nitzovim, the Or HaChaim then says you can understand what the function was of this bris. Why this bris was different than the previous brisos that were made between the Ribbono Shel and Klal Yisrael. In fact, the singularity, the uniqueness of this bris as opposed to the previous brisos that were made between the Ribbono Shel and Klal Yisrael lies in the word Nitzovim. And that's why the Torah uses that word. Because that word is to signify to us why this bris was different than any other bris. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, what does the word Nitzovim mean? Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, well, if you want to know what a word means, then one of the best ways of finding out what a word means is to look for the same word in another context and see what the word means in the other context, and then you know what the word means in this context. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, where do we find the root of the word Nitzovim found elsewhere in the 26 Sifrei Tanakh? Where do we find in Tanakh the word Nitzovim? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, anybody who has learned Megillas Rus, knows that the word appears in Megillas Rus. Where does the word appear in Megillas Rus? The word appears in Megillas Rus not in the form of Nitzovim, but in the singular form. The word appears in Megillas Rus in connection with the fact that Rus went to gather together to find food for herself and for her mother-in-law. How was she going to find food for herself and for her mother-in-law? By going to the fields and taking from the fields the leket and the shikho and the peor, the portions of the field which the owner of the field has to leave over for Aniyim. And she, Ruth, and her mother-in-law, Naomi, who had just returned from Eretz Yisrael and were penniless and were starving, definitely had the din of Aniyim that they were entitled to take this food. And therefore she went down to the field. And the Pasuk says that when she goes down to the field, there is a foreman who is overseeing the workers in the field. There is a guy in charge in the field. How does the Pasuk describe the guy who is in charge in the field? The Pasuk says in Perek Beis, Pasuk Vov of Rus, the Pasuk says, Hanar, there was a young man, Hanitzov al-Hakoitzrim. Hanitzov. That's where we find the word Nitzovim. Hanitzov, there was a young man, Hanitzov, who was standing over the Kaitzrim, the workers who were reaping the fields. Says Erechayim HaKadosh, what does it mean, Hanar Hanitzov al HaKaitzrim? What does it mean, the young man who was Nitzav on the Kaitzrim? Says Erechayim HaKadosh, HaMemuneh, he was the guy in charge. He was the foreman. He was the boss. What was he in charge of? What was his function? What was his job? What did he have to do? So the Arachayim HaKadosh, what he has to do was to ensure Shehakoitzrim, that the workers who were reaping the field, Yasu es Malachtam, should do their job. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, if so, we now know what the word Nitzov means. The word Nitzov means somebody who is responsible to see that other people are doing their job. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, if so, let's go back to the first pasuk in this week's Parsha. Atem Nitzovim Hayoim Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Aleikeichem. You, the entirety of Klal Yisrael. And then the pasuk lists every single possible member of Klal Yisrael. Be it the head of a shevet, be it a Talmud Chochem, be it a guy who's a commoner, who's a poshta guy, he's a chayst of Eitzim, he's a shay of Mayim, be it a ger, it doesn't matter who it is. You, all of you, says the pasuk, Nitzovim. You are Mamunim, says the Arachayim HaKadosh. You are responsible to see that everybody else is doing their job. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, if so, we can now understand what the function and what the purpose of this bris was. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh the following. At Maimed Har Sinai, Am Yisrael made a contract with Ribbono Shel Olam. They made a deal with Ribbono Shel Olam. I give you Torah, you give me Talmud Torah and Shmiras HaMitzvahs. I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, give you Torah. That's my part of the deal. And your part of the deal is, you give me being Shmiras HaMitzvahs and learning Torah. You keep your part of the deal, I give you Schar. You don't keep your part of the deal, you get punished. That contract, that deal, that agreement between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael was repeated again on the second occasion. It was repeated again, Parshas Kisavai. Parshas Kisavai, when it's repeated again, it's repeated in a little more detail. I give you Torah, you give me mitzvahs and Talmud Torah, you keep it, you get 98 brachas. You don't keep the deal, you get 98 klolos, 98 curses, with a very vivid description, as we saw last week, of every single one of the curses that will befall Klal Yisrael, if Rachman el Islam. They are not Shema Torah mitzvahs, and they're not Lame Day Torah. So why does Moshe Rabbeinu get everybody together on the day of his death and make a third bris? Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, this third bris is a different type of bris altogether. This is a new deal. We'll see in a moment that it's not really new. But to us it seems to be a new deal. Not only are you mechuy of yourself to be a Shema Torah mitzvah and to be a Lame Torah, but Nitzovim, you are responsible for everybody else. And the same is true of everybody else. They are responsible for you. Each and every Jew is a Memunah on every other Jew, Sheyasa Malachtom, that they should do what they're meant to do. That's a concept which exists in Halacha. I can, in Halacha, make a deal with you and take a third party to be a guarantor on the deal. That's called, in the language of halacha, an orev, a guarantor. What is being told to us in Parshas Nitzavim is that the Ribbono Shel'olam made a deal with Klal Yisrael. And the deal is that every single Jew is a guarantor for every other Jew. The Torah then continues, and the Torah then describes, not in as much detail as in Parshas Kisavai, but basically as a synopsis, what is going to happen if Klal Yisrael do not keep their part of the deal. And the Pasuk says that it depends. It depends who doesn't keep the deal. Says the Pasuk. V'hoya b'shomei es divrei ha'ola azois. If there is an individual amongst you who is present. If there is an individual, says the Pasuk. V'izbareich b'lvavoy le'imaya. And he satisfies his conscience by saying to himself, Sholem Yihyeli, this has nothing at all to do with me, because by chance and by accident I happen to have been born from a Jewish mother, unfortunately, and therefore, according to Jewish law, I am Jewish. But it doesn't obligate me in any way whatsoever, and I don't care two hoots about it. Says the Pasuk, Lo yoyve Hashem slayach loy. The Rebbe Shalom won't be willing to forgive him. And what is going to be the result? Umocha Hashem es shmoy mitachas ha-shamayim. He's going to get wiped out. That's an individual. And what happens if it's not an individual? What happens if it's an entire tribe? There's an entire group of people who come to the conclusion, this is not for me. We're not going to be showing the Torah mitzvahs, we're not going to be laying day Torah. Says the Pasuk, in that situation, they won't be all wiped out, but they will get a very severe punishment. So we now have a Pasuk which tells us clearly what's going to happen to the individual, and a Pasuk which tells us clearly what's going to happen to a tribe. But then the Torah continues, and the Torah says something very strange. After the Torah tells us what happens to the individual, and the Torah tells us what happens to a tribe, the Torah says, and what happens if it becomes a common theme amongst Klal Yisrael that they totally ignore the contract that they made with the Ribbono Shel Olam? Says the Torah, then you're going to see something interesting. It may not happen immediately. It may not be you. But it will be your children, it will be your grandchildren. What will they see? They will see Makos Ha'aretz Ahi. What's going to happen to the place where you are living? The place where you are. Sit down! The place where you are. Right? That's what's going to happen. To which the Mephoshim immediately ask a question. And the question that the Mephoshim ask is that we can understand that if an individual does something wrong, he gets punished. We can understand if a group of individuals do something wrong as a group, the group gets punished. But the land didn't do anything wrong. What did the land do? People are living there. So why does the land suffer? Why does the Torah come along and the Torah say that if the entirety of Klal Yisrael start doing things wrong, then the land is going to suffer? There's going to be a Churban Haaretz. What did the land do? The land's an innate object that can't do anything. But it has no sense, it has no brains, It cannot function, it cannot think, it's basically a Lady Varia guy. So why does it get punished? It doesn't do anything. It hasn't got the capacity to do anything. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And the halacha says the following. The halacha says that if Reuven is short of money, and Reuven wants to borrow money from Shimon, there is a process in halacha as how you borrow money. There is a concept in halacha of borrowing money. You have the right in halacha to go to somebody and say, do me a favor, lend me $1,000. And he can lend you $1,000. And if you do it in the proper manner, and if you do it in the way that the Shulchan Aruch says you should do it, right, then it is a legally binding agreement that you loan the guy money to be paid back on a certain day, and he has to pay you back on that day. The minute you loan somebody money, the person who borrows the money, if it's done in the proper manner, is legally committed to pay back the money. But not only is he legally committed to pay back the money, the act of borrowing money creates on the borrower two shibudim, two liens, automatically, without it even having to be mentioned in the contract, without it having to be discussed explicitly. The very act of borrowing the money creates a situation whereby the guy who lent you the money now has a legal lien on you, and in fact he has two legal liens on you. What are the two legal liens that he has on you? Number one, he has a legal lien that's called a shibud haguf. What is a shibud haguf? A shibud haguf is that you have an obligation to pay him back the money. You, the person, have an obligation to pay him back the money. And it's a mitzvah. It's a positive commandment to pay back the money that you borrowed. It's no different than the positive commandment of shaking a lulav, eating a gzayas matzah, or blowing a shofar. That's called a shibud haguf. Your guf, you, the human being, has an obligation incumbent upon your guf to pay him back the money that you borrowed from him. Number two, he has a second lien on you as well. What's the second lien that he has on you? The second lien that he has on you is on your money, on your possessions. There's an automatic mortgage that goes on your possessions to the amount of money that you borrowed. That's called a shibud nechosin. So every single individual who borrows, immediately, halachically, that creates two shibudim, a shibud aguf and a shibud nechosin. The Ribbono Shel'olam gave at Maimed Har Sinai to Klal Yisrael a halvo'o, a loan. That loan was called Torah. And there was a payback on that loan. The payback on that loan was that that loan had to be paid back in a certain form at certain times. It had to be paid back on Pesach by eating a Kazayas Matzah. It had to be paid back on Sukkot by taking a lulav. It did not have to be paid back on Shavuos by eating cheesecake. It had to be paid back on Shabbos by being Shomer Shabbos. It had to be paid back every day by saying Kriyat Shema before the Seder Zman Kriyat Shema. That's the way that you pay back the loan. The way in which the loan has to be paid back is by doing what the Ribbono Shel'olam wants us to do. And the Ribbono Shel'olam has a shibud on us because we took a loan. And the shibud is a shibud aguf, and the shibud is a shibud nechasim as well. So when the person doesn't pay back the loan, the Ribbono Shel'olam does one of two things, or both. He either activates the shibud aguf, in which case there are 98 klolas that can theoretically come upon the person for not paying back the loan, or alternatively, or in addition, he activates the shibud nechasim. Not only will I hit you, but I'll hit your land. Land doesn't mean physical land. Land means possessions. In an agricultural society, that which a person owned was Oretz, was land. When Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, they came into Eretz Yisrael that it was an agricultural society, that the land would be their means of support. That was the way that they survived. That was their panasa. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, fine, we made a contract. And the contract is that I give you the loan of Torah and you pay me back by doing certain things. If you pay me back, fine. If you don't pay me back, I'll hit you in two places. You personally, and your parnasa will collapse. And the economic climate will collapse. And people who one day are millionaires will be the next day paupers. And people who had a job won't have a job. But for the pasuk says, stage three in the game is shibud nechasim. The Ribbono Shel Olam is goyve from nechasim. He takes it from the nechasim. However, the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis explains that within this contract that the Ribbono Shel Olam made with Klal Yisrael, there is an additional way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam reclaims his debt. Besides Shibud HaGuf, besides Shibud Nechasim, there is an additional way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam reclaims his debt. Because there exists in Halacha another concept. There exists in Halacha a concept that if Reuven wants to borrow $1,000 from Shimon, as we said, there is a method in which you can do it halachically, and in which case there becomes a Shibud HaGuf and a Shibud Nechasim on Shimon. But what happens if Reuven doesn't trust Shimon? He doesn't trust that Shimon is going to pay him back the loan. On the other hand, he's a good guy, he's a nice guy, he's a Baal Chesed, he wants to do a Tayyivah to Shimon. So he turns around to Shimon and he says, I'll lend you the $1,000, no problem. Bring me a guarantor. There the halacha is, no problem. If Levi comes along and Levi signs guarantor on the loan, now Levi is now responsible for the loan. In such a situation, what happens if Shimon doesn't pay up? You go to Levi. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the same is true here as well. The Ribbono Shel Olam made a deal with Klal Yisrael. There is a Shibud HaGuf on Klal Yisrael if they don't keep their part of the deal. The Guf suffers. There's a Shibud Nechasim if they don't keep their part of the deal, the Nechasim suffer. But there's also guarantors on the deal. Why? Because Atem Nitzovim Hayoim Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Aleikeichem. Each Jew is responsible for another Jew. And therefore, if the other Jew is not doing what he's meant to do, the Ribbono Shel Olam will try and get it from him. And if he can't get it from him, what's he going to do? He's going to go to the guarantor. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that means the following. Says the Gemara, Anu Ubneinu Mahavim Arevim Lekach. We, all future generations, everybody, every single Jew from the time of the Krisus Bris of Parshas Nitzavim, is an arev on the other Jew who's within his environment, who he has contact with, who he is together with, to ensure that the other Jew is keeping his part of the contract. Says Rashi, there is a pasuk in this week's parsha. And the pasuk in this week's parsha says, Hanigloys Lonu Vahanistoris Lashem Elekeinu. The Ribbono Shel Olam knows what's going on in a person's mind. We only know what a person does. Says Rashi, Klal Yisrael can come with a taina to the Ribbono Shel Olam. what's the taina that they can come to the Ribbono Shel Olam? They can say the following. If you look in this week's parsha, what does it say? It says that if there will be a Jew amongst you, who what? Says the pasuk, Asher levavai poine hayoim, whose heart is turning away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then it continues and says all the punishments that will happen. Says Rashi, then we can come to the Ribbono Shel Olam and we can say, how can you make us responsible for the Jews' heart is turning away from the Ribbono Shel Olam? You can make me responsible when I see somebody else doing something he shouldn't do, then I should attempt to stop him to do it. But we're not mind readers, we don't know what's going on in people's minds. So how can you make us responsible for what's going on in another person's mind? Why should we be punished for another person's hirurei aveira? What's going to do with me? I can't stop it. We don't know what's going into another person's mind. So on that the pasuk says, don't worry. Hanistora is that which is going on in a person's mind, you're not responsible for. L'Hashem Elokeinu, the Ribbono Shel Olam will deal with him about that. But Aniglois, the guy's doing it in front of you, and you're not reacting, you're not doing anything about it, you're not stopping it, on that you are a guarantor. On that, you are going to get punished. Which means, and this is the way that the Mephoshim Lam Shat in the Gemara there, that if an individual does a chet, and the people around him had the possibility of stopping it, and the Mephoshim say that there are a variety of ways in which they could stop it. They could go and tell Sanhedrin what he's doing, and Sanhedrin would send the police force out to stop him. They could themselves stop him. They could convince him. There are all sorts of options how you can stop a guy doing an Aveira. And he didn't do it. He is going to get punished for it because he is a guarantee. He is a guarantor. He is an Erev. And every Aveira that's done by somebody else, which we had the possibility of stopping and we didn't stop it, we're going to get punished for it in the same way as the other person is going to get punished for it. Because when Klal Yisrael stood at Maimed Har Sinai, they actually accepted upon themselves a guarantee for everybody else. Here at the bris that was made in Parshas Nitzavim, it's spelt out very clearly, the guarantor. But we actually said it at Maimed Har Sinai. What did the Jews say at Maimed Har Sinai? They said, Na'aseh v'nishma. What's called Na'aseh v'nishma? The guy standing in my Maimed Har Sinai, here's what the Ribbono Shel Olam says. He says, Ayaseh v'eshma. I will do and I will hear. Right? Whether he's going to do or he's going to hear is his business. Nothing to do with me. The answer is it's not true. What did Klal Yisrael say? Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do. In other words, we all of us accept responsibility, one for the other. What does that mean? That means something which is a little bit scary. That means the following. That means that we have the obligation to ensure that the other guy is doing what he should be doing. Which means that if he's not doing what he should be doing, then he can't turn around and say, it's not your business. Because at the end of the day, I'm the guy who's responsible for my actions, and I will get punished for it, and if I don't mind being punished for it, it's not your problem. Untrue. It's not you who's going to get punished for it, it's you and me. Because everything you do affects me as well, because I'm a guarantor. So if you've got 25 guys or 30 guys in a yeshiva, who are living in a close-knit society, the guy who says, leave me alone, it's my problem if I get up for davening or don't get up for davening, it's my problem if I'm eating kosher or I'm not eating kosher, it's my problem if I'm pulling plugs out on Shabbos and putting them back in thinking nobody's seeing, right? It's not true. It's not your problem. It's everybody's problem. Because everybody is responsible one for the other. Moshe Rabbeinu is standing on the day that he's going to die. And he's talking to Klal Yisrael. It's before they go into Eretz Yisrael. And what does he talk to them about? It's very strange. After he finishes saying that each Jew is responsible one for the other, he carries on and he says that very strange statement being made here by Moshe Rabbeinu. That we're frightened, says Moshe Rabbeinu, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings you into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to get involved in the Aveira of Aveda Zorah. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu worried that Klal Yisrael is going to get involved in Avodah Zarah? You're talking here about the Dor HaMidbar, you're talking here about Dor HaDeah, you're talking about the generation that saw for a period of 40 years the way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam and every single step of the way dealt with them in a totally miraculous hanhoga. You're talking about a Dor who saw the Mon, who saw the Amud HaAnon, who saw the Be'er Miriam. Why should these people who experienced open miracles for 40 years suddenly come into Eretz Yisrael and boom, the next day they're going to become idol worshippers? I mean, why should that happen? So Moshe Rabbeinu starts off and he says the following. It's very interesting if you read the Psukim, it's very interesting the way it works. Moshe Rabbeinu starts off and he says, Ki atem yadaitem, because you know, you were people who spent a long part of your life in Egypt. And you became part of Egyptian society. Yes, you were slaves. Yes, they mistreated you. But your entire visual experience and your entire life experience was living in Egypt. The Tiru, and whether you liked it or not, you saw as Shikutzehem ve es Gilulehem. You saw the fact that they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah and they had idols. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, whether you agreed with idol worship or whether you laughed at idol worship, the actual Metzias, the actual fact that you spent a period of your life walking around amongst idol worshippers and seeing the idols, it's true that you thought it was ridiculous. It's true that you maybe even thought that it was something which is actually disgusting, because part of the way in which they served idols, without going into the details, was pretty disgusting. Right, so you may have even said, you know, this is not even attractive, what they're doing, right? In other words, initially, v'tiru es shikutzehem v'es gilulehem. Initially, what you saw this as being shikutzehem, abominations. Gilulehem. You saw this as being detestable. But says Moshe Rabbeinu to them, when you see something which is an abomination, and you see something which is detestable, or you hear something which is an abomination, or you hear something which is detestable, if you hear it long enough, or you see it long enough, what happens? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, Eitz Ve'Eben. It suddenly becomes neutralized. It's not something that you may desire, but after having seen it long enough, it loses the element of being an abomination and loses the element of being detestable, and it becomes something neutral. It becomes something you're not shocked about anymore. It's just, yeah, okay, that's the way he talks, right? Don't get taken aback by his language. That's the way he talks. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, but you know what the problem is? After that comes another stage. If you continue hearing and seeing it, it doesn't remain neutral. Kesev v'zahav. It becomes something like kesev v'zahav eventually. It becomes something which is desirable. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, that is basic human psychology. Basic human psychology is, initially, one gets a reaction of mius, one gets a reaction of tiuv. One says, ugh. Then one says, ah, don't bother me. Let him do what he wants. And then it's, if he's doing it, I'm doing it. Because that's human nature. Human nature, as one of the great Bali Musa once said, is described by the Torah in the words of Esav. Esav comes home and he's starving hungry. Yaakov is cooking lentils. Esav says, give me some of that food. Yaakov says, sure, no problem, sell me the Bechira. To which Esav says, Mali Abchira. What do I care about the Bechira? Take the Bechira, just give me my plate of lentils. And then the pasuk says, Vayives es Abchira. He despised the Bechira. Says, Rechik Chasmin in Oyol, that is human psychology. Stage number one is Taiva. I'm hungry. That's how it starts. It always starts with a tither. Stage number two is, it's not important. Stage number three, it becomes an ideology. Stage number one is, I want to sleep. Stage number two is, I don't care about tefillah b'tzibur. Stage number three is, I'm a brisker. Tefillah b'tzibur is something which affects your kavanah. You're better off davening be a chidus. Anyway, there's no chiv of tefillah b'tzibur. It's only a kiyum, it's not a din, it's not a ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Every tither ends up to become an ideology. Rav Dessler writes in Michtav Melio, if you ever see a guy who's got very firm opinions about something, look for the tither. Lo'ovdu Yisroel Avodah Zorah Elo Bishvilo Aroyas. Klal Yisrael were over Avodah Zorah. Klal Yisrael ever thought that a piece of wood actually runs the world, or that a lump of stone actually has some sort of influence? Of course not. But you can't run off with the neighbor's wife if you're a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. But if you can create a new religion, then you can justify running off with a neighbor's wife. So I'll become an idol worshipper. My particular group of idol worshippers, they run off with a neighbor's wife. That's their Avodas Hashem. I have a very close friend. He lives in Harnof. Actually, now he just moved to Kiryat Moshe. You can go visit him if you want, you don't believe me. His name's Tuvia Krevet. He studied in Yale University. He had a roommate. His roommate was a student. He was 21 years old. He fell in love with a 12-year-old girl. He fell in love with a 12-year-old girl. He was lying in bed one night, and he turns around to the two guys in his room, and he says, you know, they're going to arrest me in the end. Right? Starting up molesting a minor, right? He says, the only way that I'm going to get out of this is by creating a religion. So he did. Became one of the biggest religions in the world. Scientology. The guy's name was Hubbard. Ve'ovdu Yisrael aveda zara ela bishvil ha'arayas. Religions get created in order that people can follow their tithes. Ideologies get created in order that people should follow their tithes. Everybody's got a fixed ideology. I am the type of guy who can learn 26 minutes a week. That's who I am. And if I learn 26 minutes a week, then you let me go for 4 hours to the local library to get onto the internet. And you let me go for 16 hours to town and get beaten up on a bus. And you let me do this, and you let me do that, and you let me do this, and you let me do that. Then I guarantee you that in the year 2076, when I will be 78 years old, I will start coming to davening. Just give me space. It's an ideology. You're a baltiver. It's not an ideology. You're a baltiver. You want to sleep. You want to spend hours on the internet. How do you justify it? And like your parents are paying $17,000 a year for you to do it. But you can get away with it for probably $20 a year if you really wanted to. So how do you justify it? By creating an ideology. Rabbi, you have to understand me. If you knew where I was coming from, I know where you're coming from. So Mishnah and Pirkei Avos is actually where you're coming from. If anybody wants to know, check it out. I know exactly where you're coming from. So what? If you live in an environment, in a dorm, where you see things and you hear things, it will have an effect. Initially it'll be shikut, it'll be mos. Then it will become Evan and Eitz, but then it will become Kesef Azov. And therefore, if you allow it, you are being Pogim in your Arvus. It's very simple. Judaism is a very simple religion. There is 2 plus 2 plus 2, and it equals 6. You do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, the results are 2 plus 2 plus 2. You don't do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, the results are 2 plus 2 plus 2. And then we keep coming back and we keep saying, why me? Why you, idiot? Because you didn't do what you were meant to do. Or alternatively, even if you did do what you were meant to do, you let the guy sleeping in the bed next to you do what he wanted to do. And you're a nerve. We don't live in our own worlds. We're not a group of people wandering around in our own circuits. We're interconnected. We're responsible one for the other. We're responsible for creating the environment that other people should do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants them to do. And we will be responsible if we create an environment which is conducive to people not doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants them to do. There's no games involved. There's no two ways about it. And we have one choice. We can either wake up in time, or we can wait, Rachman al-Islam, until the Ribbono Shel Olam decides to wake us up. So why do we have to wait until the Ribbono Shel Olam decides to wake us up? Why can't we wake up on our own accord? It's much more pleasant to wake up on our own accord than get the Ribbono Shel Olam to wake us up. He starts off in little ways. Starts off with little things. You fall down, you fall off a bike, you do this, you do that. And it starts with little things. You break your arm, you get in the car, you're convinced the truck's moving, the truck's standing still. You're convinced. You know. But if you're blind, you can't see the truck standing still. I swear, blind, the truck was moving. I saw it. I saw the truck moving in front of me. Right, 4 smashed ribs, 5-0, your arm's gone, your leg's gone, your this is gone, that's gone. It's all the same thing. Everybody trying to send messages. He sends messages. So at the beginning he sends them like little ones. Yeah, an arm, a leg, a rib. Yeah, it gets bigger. And it gets bigger. Then we become from all of a sudden. Ooh, then we become tzaddikim all of a sudden. Then we're knocking back the tail in there and we're davening, we're making kabbalas and whatever. Too late. Boom, you're zapped out. Finished.